today on Vox Talk's Economics. Could AI transform our economies to produce explosive growth? I'm talking to an economist who thinks this could happen sooner than you think. Welcome to Vox Talks Economics from the Centre for Economic Policy Research. My name's Tim Phillips. Every week we bring you the best new research in economics. So remember, subscribe. You find us wherever you get your podcasts. Follow us on Instagram as well at Vox Talks Economics. What will be the impact of AI on productivity, growth, our work, and on society? Anton Korenek of the University of Virginia and CEPR, he's now also one of Time's top 100 most influential people in AI, and he's also now a member of Anthropic's Economic Advisory Council. He was one of the first researchers to treat this question with the seriousness that we all now know it deserves. In the meantime, he's continued to push the boundaries of research into the impact of AI. And he's created a new paper that brings a new perspective to this question. I'm going to ask him about this paper. I hope we can also talk about the economics of transformative AI initiative at the University of Virginia. Anton, welcome back.
Yes, it's great to be on air with you again, Tim.
When we first spoke, I looked it up. It was back in September 2022 when I spoke to you about an episode that was called Our Workless Future. At that time, what had you observed about the impact of technology that, I don't know, maybe other researchers at that moment had missed?
I'll be completely honest. When we researchers pick our research topics, in some ways we make bets, right? And we make somewhat informed bets. But when I decided to go all in on AI, which was about a decade ago, I did not expect all of this to happen so quickly myself. So honestly, I was just lucky.
Now, that was talking about the impact of automation on productivity. Many economists, and notable amongst them, are most often cited probably Daron Acemoglu, have estimated quite a small short-run impact of AI on productivity and on jobs. Are the assumptions that economists who are doing this kind of modelling making, are they reasonable assumptions given their starting point and the way that they see the labour market and productivity?
Yeah, so Daron came up with this number of 0.07% a year.
Yes.
As the growth effects of AI. And I would say that was a reasonable number for the AI that we had in 2024.
Right.
But it did not quite account for all the progress that we were already expecting at the time, and certainly for the progress that we have seen since. And the way he got to this number was he basically multiplied three numbers: the fraction of jobs that will be affected by this, the fraction of tasks in each of these jobs, and the productivity gains in each of these tasks. And he kind of lowballed all three of them. And if you multiply three small numbers, you get a very small number at the end. And that were those famous 0.07%. I think at this point, we may have seen just about that much growth impact of AI at a global level, maybe like a tiny bit more, but not much more. What I would argue is the numbers that we have seen in the past and the AI capabilities that we have all experienced in the past are only a small part of what is yet to come.
Anton also leads the CEPR Research Policy Network on AI, which is building a community of researchers to understand the impact of AI, improve our ability to predict its scope, and guide policy. If you want to find out more about its activities or read its published research, you will find it at cepr.org. Just look for the RPN on AI or follow the link in the show notes.
So I want to talk about your recent paper, and it's called When Does Automating AI Research Produce Explosive Growth? certainly not growth of 0.07%. It gives an insight into how AI labs are planning to use the technological progress that we are seeing to increase the pace of innovation. What are they doing here? What's their ambition?
I think the ambition of all the leading AI companies is to get to a stage of what is often called recursive self-improvement, which may trigger something like an intelligence explosion. The idea for this was actually first articulated by John von Neumann in the 1950s. And he had this notion, well, if an AI can do everything that a human can do, one of the things that we do is to create better AI systems. So once the AI is smart enough, it may by itself be able to create better versions. If the AI gets better and faster, then that process may be in itself accelerating and may produce really astounding levels of intelligence in a relatively short frame of time. All the leading labs are working towards some version of that vision.
So what we have then is a process that accelerates because of these feedback loops that are built into how this progress is being done, how this research is being done.
That's exactly right.
But economists, who tend to be skeptical about these sort of things, they are skeptical about this endogenous process, aren't they? Why are they skeptical about it?
Well, there are, I think, three fair reasons to be skeptical.
Uh-huh.
The first one is the AIs are not quite good enough yet to do what we just described. And so this is a question of how rapidly our capability is going to increase. Now, this is speculative, right? I actually think it's quite plausible that we will be at that level of AI capabilities within the next 2 to 5 years, maybe even quicker, maybe slightly slower than that. But yeah, that's the first factor of uncertainty. The second factor of uncertainty is that we don't know for sure, once we have improved these systems past a certain point, it may actually get really hard to make further progress. Economists call this the returns to scale of additional resource investments. And if it turns out that human levels of intelligence are close to the maximum of what you can plausibly aim for, then maybe we can surpass that very easily. Now, that doesn't strike me as super plausible, in part because the way that our intelligence works, in some ways you can view it as an evolutionary accident. It was the trade-off between so many different factors, and then we ended up with the way that our human brains are today. And then the third factor that economists zero in, and I think that's an important factor, and that's probably something that's a little bit underappreciated in the discussion among technologists, is the notion of bottlenecks in the economy.
Mm-hmm.
So let's say we make intelligence pervasive and abundant and really cheap. You can get superhuman level AIs at like a cost of pennies, and they can solve any complicated intellectual questions you can envision. They still can't do everything that's needed in the economy, because a lot of tasks in the economy, a lot of valuable functions require physical labor. That's not a question of intelligence. You can automate some of this with robotics, but that's going to take a little bit longer than just developing AI. Some of the functions that we humans want in the economy are something that we want other humans to perform. Even if you had a robot that could perfectly simulate a human or simulate it even better than a human, there are some things for which humans will still want humans. So let's say, for example, if you want to speak to a therapist, I'm sure many humans want that function to be performed by fellow humans, even if the AI could in principle do it better. These bottlenecks, they mean that even if you have this amazing progress in intellectual capabilities by the AI, it won't completely revolutionize the economy immediately, and it will probably make things turn out slower than some of the technologists expect.
Out of these three objections, on the first one, I would say that your projections, going back a few years and having talked to you several times about this, for the pace of improvement in AI have turned out to be pretty accurate. You were much more positive about AI than many economists were at the beginning.
Yeah.
On the bottlenecks, some of that is societal choice and societal change, isn't it?
That's a very good observation. Yeah, it's indeed a choice of how much do we want to automate. And I think there's going to be lots of difficult choices, actually, that we will face in just the next couple of years.
But in this research, you focused on the middle one, whether or not we're going to have those diminishing returns.
That's
whether
right.
We can achieve explosive growth through this improvement in technology. Do you apply standard growth theory, endogenous growth theory, to analyze this?
Yeah, actually, we use fairly standard semi-endogenous growth models. And what these models capture and what we do in this paper is we essentially capture the trade-off between two main forces. So the first force, and we have already discussed that, is that if you have solved one problem, the next problem is going to be harder.
Mm-hmm.
So there is, in some sense, decreasing returns to additional resources in research. And the second force is, if you have a more advanced economy, if you have more resources, you can actually throw more at these problems and make further progress faster because you have a bigger economy or a bigger research workforce or whatever it may be. And essentially, if the second force is larger than the first force, then you can obtain conditions under which growth becomes explosive and under which we would expect that eventually in the model, the economy would diverge towards infinity in finite time. You would have something like what computer scientists call the singularity.
The singularity, where technological progress just becomes so fast.
In the model, it would become
it's unbounded.
Infinite.
Yeah. Can you possibly calibrate and estimate a model like this? Because we're looking at the sort of technological progress that we haven't seen before and we haven't been seeing for very long.
Yeah, that's right. So you need to make several assumptions in order to calibrate this. But I would say the main assumption is essentially to assume that the returns to scale to additional research are going to be what they have been in the past.
Mm-hmm.
So in various technological fields, we have seen regularities of, let's take, for example, chips, mm-hmm. hardware progress. We all know this in the context of Moore's law. We have seen that basically chip capabilities have doubled every 2 years. And this has required something like an increase in the workforce of scientists working on chips by 8% a year. So that gives you a sense of how much more resources do I have to put in to maintain a given growth rate of the sector. And you can take that parameter, apply it to that sector, and we do the same thing for the economy as a whole as well. And that allows you to predict whether you will be able to achieve explosive growth or whether growth is going to be just constant, or whether it could also be declining over time.
Yes, or whether it's going to be 0.07%. What do you come out with at the end of this?
Let me perhaps first tell you a little bit more about the specific considerations that we look at in this model. What we emphasize is that there are some technological feedback loops going on in the economy, and there are also what we call economic feedback loops. So technological feedback loops appear in essentially three forms. The first one, there is a feedback loop from progress in hardware quality. If you have better hardware, you can do everything else in the economy more easily. The second one is feedback loops in software. And I think looking at what has been happening in the context of AI over the past year, there has really been tremendous progress on that front. So if you have better software, you can do everything else in the economy more easily. And the third one is about generalized technological progress, which is what essentially all of our economy depends on. This is progress in the health sciences, progress in basic scientific research across many different domains. And the thing is, all three of these feed into each other. And if you accelerate one of them, let's say, for example, we have accelerated software research, then it accelerates all of them, because having better software allows you to design better chips. It allows you to also perform better research in economics and many other disciplines. Now, on top of that, there are also economic feedback loops, which the best way of thinking about is if you have a bigger economy, you can sustain more research efforts and everything, and you can use those efforts to make the economy even bigger. And what we find is that if you automate a relatively modest fraction of all these different sectors, you can reach conditions under which the economy will enter an explosive growth regime. And what that tells me is that if software generation, and also this is a crucial sector in the economy, hardware production gets just a little bit more automated in the coming years, then we should expect that explosive regime to take place.
That is an incredibly optimistic view of what's happening here. Does it imply that we might have to start rethinking how economists think about growth?
I think that's right, yeah. And Tim, on your point that this is a very optimistic view, it's actually a more optimistic view than what's advanced by the AI labs, because they don't take into consideration the additional feedback loops. So yes. In the kind of standard story of recursive self-improvement, the software needs to be able to do everything. In our version of explosive growth, it's enough if you have just automated a sufficient fraction of that and the other feedback loops help you to achieve explosive growth. So yeah, what does it mean for our economic theories of growth? Our theories have always been driven by our lived experiences. And in growth theory, nobody has perhaps been more influential than Kaldor, who measured almost a century ago that our economies have been roughly on these balanced growth paths. And after he provided these measurements, economic theorists basically provided the models that we need to explain those patterns. And those models, like, let's see, the Solow model, Ramsey model, they have been like the bread and butter of growth economists. And they were the models that fit the data really well. And models of explosive growth were ruled out because you couldn't really see very much of that if we looked at the macroeconomic experience from the past century. So, you know, economists being empirical researchers, they just said, well, let's stick with the models that fit the evidence. Now, what these semi-endogenous growth models tell you, especially once you hit these feedback loops that we identify, is that the future may be a little bit different from what the past has been. And this is, of course, speculative, but it's not grounded in nothing. It's grounded in the predictions of all the leading AI labs. It's grounded in empirical measurements of what the returns to scale of research in the past have been, and in the observation that more and more of the research that we are talking about is becoming automated.
Policymakers analyze growth and they know about what's happening in growth because of national statistics. Growth moves fairly slowly and it moves fairly evenly, so that's proved to be adequate. Are they going to be able to monitor or measure this process? How would they do that?
Yeah, in some sense, you can say that our systems of national account of like how we measure GDP and so on are not very well equipped to measuring the AI economy. I'm actually working on a project right now that's just entitled Measuring the AI Economy. Mm-hmm. And it attempts to basically zoom in on that AI sector and to provide more nuanced and detailed measurement of what's going on economically in that area. And I'll just point out two quick things that traditional statistics don't capture and that I think we will increasingly need to capture. One is that if you enter this world of recursive self-improvement, a lot of the AI's activity will be working on future AI, which should all count as investment according to the standard GDP statistics. It's currently not entirely counted as such. And then a second point, which goes even beyond that, is that the way that the chatbot model works, which is similar to a lot of digital technologies, is that they create a lot more consumer surplus than what you actually pay for. And in GDP, one of the conscious choices was to capture market transactions. And so that means we never measure all the surplus that accrues to you and me because we can use, let's say, the internet, because we can use chatbots, because we can use search engines beyond what you actually pay for. And I guess we can all agree, and there's some really interesting research on that as well from the Stanford Digital Economy Lab, that the value that we all attach to these things is much, much higher than what we typically pay for it.
So to paraphrase the famous quote, that AI will be everywhere except in the productivity statistics.
That's right.
There is also the question of who this growth is benefiting, because if it is explosive, then it has the potential to transform our lives. But whose lives will it transform? How should we be thinking about that?
Yeah, I think that's going to be really a crucial question as we are approaching this world that you and I have just been discussing. So in the best of all cases, and you know, I'm at heart an optimist, so I always want to start with the best. In the best of all cases, if we have this economy that can just produce goods and services of very high quality, extremely efficiently and productively, we could all be so much better off. In the worst of all cases, it could be an economy of the machines, by the machines, and for the machines that just self-propagates and humans get at best some scraps. And I think that would be a failure, because if we have so much greater economic possibilities, we would want those possibilities to be shared broadly. So we want to use the promise of this technology to achieve something like shared prosperity.
Now let's talk about the Economics of Transformative AI initiative that you set up at the University of Virginia. What's it for? What's its purpose?
Yeah, so my observation was that AI research within the economics profession has started to take off. However, there's still not enough attention paid to the transformative potential of the future AI that may reach human levels of intelligence and capabilities, and that may really fundamentally change our economy. And so the goal of the Economics of Transformative AI initiative that I started is essentially to pay more attention to these future-facing questions and to inform us to better understand this possible transformation and to also allow us to better manage it.
So exactly the sorts of things that we've been talking about before, that possibility for transformative growth and change in our society. Is this about academic research, or is it designed to be directly policy relevant?
Yeah, we are a university initiative, so that means academic research is at the center of our mission. But I think what's true for all of us researchers is that at our best, we produce research that is broadly useful at informing society, at informing policymakers to make better choices, at informing the public debate.
You're an economist, but I know that you hang out with the technologists and with policymakers as well. Is this initiative really for economists, or can anyone join it?
So I think on the production side, we are all economists. It's the economics of transformative AI, right?
Yeah.
But I very much hope that on the output side, it is useful to society at large.
So as you say, a lot of economists are doing research into AI now and how it is likely to change our society, change our economies. Where can your initiative change maybe the type of research that's being done, or maybe the way it's being done?
Yeah, I think there are two ways in which we hope that our research will influence the profession. The first one is, if I talk to technologists, if I talk to people from the leading labs, everybody assigns a very high probability to these transformative capability changes in AI happening within just the next couple of years. This requires a little bit of speculative work. It requires extrapolation in ways that economists are not always comfortable. And what our initiative wants to consciously do is it wants to encourage that type of speculation. It wants to intentionally assume that transformative capabilities are going to arise and ask what they will imply for the economy. And by doing that, we hope that we can make it more acceptable within the profession to ask these speculative questions and hopefully achieve something like a snowball effect. Once a few people are touching these questions, that others are more willing to perform the speculative research that, from my perspective, really needs to happen for our societies to be well prepared for transformative AI. There's also a second track of research that we are looking into at the Transformative AI Initiative, which is how AI can in itself accelerate research. And you notice the connection there to the paper we discussed earlier of automating AI research. But yeah, AI systems have also become incredibly useful for automating parts of the economic research process. And I believe that offers great potential for us economists to make more progress faster and to basically help society better solve the economic questions that we are struggling with. And if we use this technology in a responsible, I want to say aligned way, then it allows us to perform economic or all kinds of research much, much more effectively.
Anton, you have always been broadly positive about the potential impact of AI on society, probably more so than many of your colleagues. Is that still the case?
Well, I'm by nature an optimist, and maybe that makes me prone to looking at things optimistically. But one thing I should say is that I believe that AI will be an incredibly powerful technology, and by and large, all technologies, including all powerful technologies, can be used for good or evil. And that's also true with AI. And I think that's what makes it so crucial and so important to ensure that our AI systems behave well, behave in the field, it's called behave in an aligned manner. People are talking about alignment of AI systems, alignment research. In fact, this is also a research area where I think economists have a lot of input to provide, because we economists, we have been studying for centuries, essentially, how to channel technological opportunities into broad social welfare. And the question of AI alignment is essentially a question that does precisely that.
It's been fascinating reading your research over the last few years. I hope to see much more of it. Thank you for talking about it today.
Thank you so much, Tim.
The paper we were discussing is called When Does Automating AI Research Produce Explosive Growth? Feedback Loops in Innovation Networks. And the authors, Tom Davidson, Basil Halperin, Thomas Holden, and Anton Korenek, published January 2026. There's another paper that I would reference as well, Scenarios for the Transition to AGI, Artificial General Intelligence, authors Anton Korenek and Dongyun Su, March 2024. There are many other papers with Anton's name on them, and I would recommend you read all of them. The Economics of Transformative AI Initiative, you can find that at econtai.org.
Vox Talks Economics is a Talk Normal production. The assistant producer is Megan Bieber, and our editor is Andrei Zagarian. Next time on Vox Talks Economics, can blockchain decentralize money, contracts, and finance?